In the early hours of June 9th, 2009, in a small subdivision in the quiet lakeside town of Mooresville, North Carolina, a husband and wife were inside their home when they heard a loud banging on their front door. The husband swung it open to a startling sight, a woman covered in blood, clutching a small child. He recognized her immediately, the young mom who lived across the street. She said she and her husband had just been shot, that there was someone with a gun still inside her house.
The wife was screaming that she had got shot.
It's difficult to tell any story without first having all of the basic information. What happened, to who, when and where, how and why. But sometimes we aren't afforded that luxury. Some stories lie hopelessly shrouded in hearsay and mystery, and those of us interested in learning the truth have to dig for it. Oftentimes, those stories, the ones we have to dig for, are the most important stories to tell. My name is Freddie, and this is Unforgotten, a podcast series that dives into one of these stories, the unsolved murder of Matt Stewart.
Investigators are trying to figure out who shot a father of three in his own home and why.
I remember the detectives questioning me, trying to find the dirt on Matt Stewart.
The man who murdered my father has never been caught.
This is not the type of typical crime that we have in Mooresville.
The world is a hostile environment.
In those nights that you're paralyzed in fear, you know, that he's going to come back for you. And he's going to come back for your family.
Unlike many prominent unsolved murders that you may have followed in the media, information on this particular crime, even speculation about it, is scarce. It hasn't been reported on in over 4 years. Even when it was in the press, back in 2009, all of the coverage combined could likely fit on a single piece of paper. There isn't much of anything at all. After 9 years, this horrific crime seems to have been shoved by the wayside, almost forgotten entirely. So I've decided to do this podcast to dig for the truth about what happened to Matt and to get this strange case back in the press so that the community can start talking again. Matt's murderer may still be at large, and there are likely people out there who know more than have been reported to investigators. I'm not a journalist, or really even a podcaster, but there's more than mere curiosity that led me to covering this case. I'm kind of connected to it in a strange way. Matt Stewart attended a church in Mooresville called River Life Fellowship. The church ran a private Christian school where Matt's oldest daughter attended. There were roughly 100 students, K through 12, enrolled in the school in 2009, and I was one of them. It's impossible to articulate how deeply this tragedy impacted the church, and by extension, our school. It also made a lasting impression on the entire Mooresville area.
This is very unusual for our town. This is not the type of typical crime that we have in Mooresville, and especially not in this neighborhood.
The murder of Matt Stewart is ripe with perplexing details, conflicting perspectives, rabid rumors, and hazy recollections. During this series, we'll dissect every lead we can get our hands on. But before breaking out our microscopes, we need to take an aerial view. The following are the bare-bone facts about who Matt Stewart was and what happened on the night of his murder. Matthew Ryan Stewart was born in March of 1978. The father of three children, he lived alongside his wife Angela, who goes by Angel, in a quiet neighborhood in Mooresville called Gabriel Estates. He worked as a nurse at the local hospital in the children's ward. On weekends, he coached his kids' soccer team. By all accounts, he was the ideal family man, well-loved by everyone that knew him. In the early morning hours of June 9th, 2009, emergency dispatch operators received a call 45 minutes after midnight. When first responders arrived at the scene, they found Angel Stewart across the street at a neighbor's house with her one-year-old son. She told law enforcement that an intruder had entered their home and shot her and her husband as they slept in bed with their one-year-old son. When officers finally entered the Stewart home, they found Matt's lifeless body upstairs in the master bathroom. He had been brutally murdered, shot and stabbed multiple times. Down the hall, the couple's three-year-old daughter was in her room, unharmed. Allegedly, she slept through the entire incident. The State Bureau of Investigation arrived that day to assist the Mooresville Police Department in analyzing the crime scene. To this day, both agencies maintain an open investigation into this case. News of the murder spread rapidly throughout the Charlotte metro area. Reward money provided by Matt's family, local police, and the governor's office was offered in exchange for any information that could lead to the arrest of Matt's killer. Immediately following the incident, Matt's wife Angel was not able to identify her attacker. But weeks later, she was able to provide police with enough details to release a facial composite sketch of the intruder. Like so much about this case, whether or not the sketch or reward ever generated anything meaningful for the investigation is unknown. And that's because this is still technically an open case, and if there's been any progress, law enforcement are being tight-lipped about it. What we do know is that nothing has ever led to an arrest or even the announcement of an official suspect. But that's not to say there hasn't been open speculation. No summary of this case would be complete without the recognition of another killing that happened around the same time, not too far from Mooresville. A month after Matt's murder, about 30 miles southwest in Dallas, North Carolina, police there responded to a burglary in progress. When police arrived at the scene, the suspect opened fire on him, shooting one of the officers in the leg. But their fellow officers quickly returned fire, fatally wounding the assailant. Dallas police didn't know it at the time, but the man who lay dying on the ground was no small-time home burglar. He was a cold-blooded killer who had spent the last few weeks on a murder spree that left five innocent people dead and the entire state of South Carolina in a panic. His name was Patrick Tracy Burris. Could this madman have also killed Matt Stewart? For weeks, that question appeared in headlines all over the Carolinas. Law enforcement affirmed at the time that the possibility was being investigated. Having to start somewhere, I began to focus on one simple question. Why hadn't this case been reported on in so long? I started at the last article I could find, dated September 2012. It was published in the Mooresville Tribune by a reporter named Megan Sprague.
I'm a general reporter for the Tribune. I've worked here since 2009, but I've been with the company since 2007. But I have stuck with this case. I'm just more familiar with it. I started covering it shortly after it happened. I think I've done at least three articles on this, just trying to generate some attention back to it, trying to see if there's anybody out there who might know something. It's such a local case, and it has been such a cold case. People really haven't been bringing it up in recent years that much, and maybe there is somebody out there who could possibly know something.
What was this like for the community from your experience?
I think people were surprised, honestly, because we don't have that much violent crime in this area. We don't have many murders. If we do have a murder, it's usually solved fairly quickly. The motive is apparent. From what I've gathered and who I've talked to, Matthew Stewart was very well liked. So people are just puzzled that they, you know, someone would attack him in this manner and his family.
Who have you talked to? What kind of witnesses or associates?
I have mostly talked to the police.
Have you gotten a chance to reach out to the family or people that knew Matt personally?
I have not. Mainly our focus has been on the fact that this is an unsolved crime. There have not really been any suspects. There's not been any arrests made. It's still a cold case.
I know that here locally where I am in Florida, there's several unsolved cases that there's a candlelight vigil every year. There's organizations that are started, you know, Justice for So-and-So, and, you know, real pushes to try to find the perpetrator. And
honestly, with this being a small community, I don't know if it's out of respect for their family. That could be the case. Just because there is no further information.
Has there been any articles written since 2012 about this case?
And I know the Record and Landmark, our sister paper, did something in 2016, and we ran that as well.
Megan mentioned a piece published in the Statesville Record and Landmark in 2016, but I wasn't able to pull it up online. I reached out to the paper's editor, and he let me know that he had sent reporters out to do a story on the Stewart murder in 2016, but it was never completed. The story never ran. The editor then referred me to who had been the lead reporter on that story, an experienced journalist named Jonathan Weaver.
During the time that we were looking at doing this, I was city editor at the Statesville Record and Landmark. I was kind of over the story assignments. So the editor at the time, one day he called me into his office and he said, "Let me tell you about Matthew Stewart."
Had you heard of the case before?
I had not, no. He was editor of the paper at the time this crime happened. And, you know, he told me, you know, the ins and outs of things that he knew about it. And he had kind of kept it in his back pocket, I think. He always wanted to try to do something. And, you know, we looked at it in terms of, well, let's try to pull something together for the anniversary this year, which at that time, I guess it would have been the 7th. You know, we tried to schedule out as much time as possible for me to work on that. And I brought a reporter. She went along with me initially when we went out to the neighborhood and knocked on doors and that kind of thing. At first, I thought this is going to be pretty easy.
What do you mean by that?
I assumed that there was going to be a lot out there. I thought it would be, you know, just a treasure trove. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I figured it would be maybe a 2-month project at most.
And what was the first person or persons that you reached out to?
We did a lot of background at first. The first go-to was Facebook. We found the In Memory of Matthew Stewart Facebook page, messaged a bunch of folks on that. I remember at some point fairly early finding some names of folks who lived in that neighborhood at this point. You know, this is a middle-class neighborhood. It's a place that you would never imagine that a crime like this would occur. So I did eventually get in touch with a major, I believe it was, at the Mooresville Police Department, and he said, "There's not much we can say. Send me your questions." I sent him some questions. I followed up a couple of times. If I remember correctly, he answered a couple, but nothing in any great detail.
It wasn't anything remarkable, or it wasn't anything that added to kind of what the public knowledge already was.
No. I mean, it was basically, it's an open investigation. We're still working it. I described to you before kind of how that project petered out. But part of the reason why it did is because we weren't getting cooperation anywhere. The call where the police department said the family has asked us to ask you to leave them alone. They don't want to talk right now. And I don't recall us going overboard and trying to contact them. We weren't showing up at their work. We weren't,
right.
You know.
Right.
Going to their house at midnight and knocking on the door. I mean, you know, we were just trying to just get somebody face to face briefly, just to, you know, let them know what we're trying to do. In the newspaper business, it's always hard to try to convince somebody that you don't have the worst motives. You know, a lot of times it's just trying to help, really. And, you know, I mean, obviously we wanted to tell a story that was pretty incredible, but we also wanted to put it back out there. In a lot of cases, you get people who don't want to talk to the media. There's nothing nefarious about it. They just don't want to do an interview about it. And I get that. I felt like there should have been somebody that would at least sit down with us and pretty much just said, well, maybe we'll shelve it for now. And you know, when we talked about whether it was going to happen or not, we just decided maybe we should keep what we have and then just keep plugging at it. It did gnaw at me that I didn't finish it. Kudos to you for taking this on. I mean, I still believe, just like I did when I started looking into it initially, that it's something that needs to be back out there.
It's not difficult to imagine why loved ones left behind by a horrific murder like this may decline requests for comment. Reliving that kind of trauma can't be easy. But just a few months after denying the Record and Landmark's request for comment, Angel Stewart appeared in a music video for a Christian rock band called Big Daddy Weave. In a companion video released on YouTube titled Angel's Story, Jesus I Believe, Angel recounts the night Matt was killed. The following are excerpts from that video.
I remember just hearing a sound, and I just turned my head towards our door, and saw the shadow of a man just standing in our doorway. I immediately knew that this was real, like this was not a dream. And he opened fire on us. And Matt got up to fight with the man, and I knew that I had been hit. And I just grabbed Josiah out of the bed and we ran out of the house. And I remember being on the phone with 911, knowing that I was bleeding. SWAT team got there within minutes and were taking me to the hospital. And being stitched up and having a doctor come into my room to tell me that Matt did not survive. You know, what came out of me was a sound that I had never heard, but it was a nightmare, and I knew that I was living this nightmare.
Clearly, there are members of Matt's family willing to speak publicly about his murder, maybe just not to the press. Fortunately for me, I'm not any kind of experienced journalist. Matt's daughter, who I went to school with, is named Hannah. Hannah and I didn't exactly know each other in school. She was a few grades behind me. But given the fact that we went to such a tiny school, we were aware of who each other was, and we've been Facebook friends for quite some time. I contacted her back in February to let her know I was thinking about doing a podcast on what happened to her dad and the community coming through this tragedy. I asked her if she'd be willing to talk with me about her experience. To my surprise, she was more than willing to open up.
My name is Hannah Stewart, and I'm willing to go on record about my story, where I am, where I've been.
Were you born in Mooresville?
I was born in Charlotte, but moved to Mooresville when I was 2 years old. So, I mean, like, really my entire life is a Mooresville born and raised kid. And so my mom, she had me at 19 with a college sweetheart, and they decided from the very beginning to go separate ways. She was going to this church in Mooresville called River Life Fellowship. So my mom, during the service, she would, you know, take me to the nursery, and there apparently was this super cute guy keeping the nursery. And so his name was Matt, which is ended up who she married and adopted me and became my dad. You know, when I was younger, he was like, I only kept nursery every week so I could see you and talk to your mom, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
So I think that's pretty sweet. It was perfect for a really good while. And when I was 11 years old, it was the summer of 2009, I went down to a friend's house to have a sleepover two doors down, like I did almost every weekend. The next morning was different, though, than it had ever been. So I woke up, and my grandmother came to the door, and she was crying. And I was like, what are you, like, are you crying? You know, what are you doing here kind of thing?
Was this your mom's mother?
Yep.
Okay.
And so I leaned through the doorway at my neighbor's house to give her a hug, and I looked to the left, and my entire house was surrounded by police cars and caution tape and fire trucks and a SWAT team running in and out, and I just had no idea, you know, what it could have been. I got in the car with her, and I just looked as far back as I could at my house as we were driving out of the neighborhood. We get to my great-grandparents' house, and everyone I knew was there. Everyone from the church, distant family members, they were all there. And I found my mom sitting on a couch and wrapped in a hospital gown and her arm in gauze. And I've never seen anyone look so lifeless. Like, she was so colorless. And I was like, are you okay? What happened? What's wrong? And she really couldn't even get a word out. And so she looked at my grandpa, her dad, and just said, Dad, you have to tell her. And he, you know, just embraced her and said, Angel, you have to do this. And so she looked at me and she said, a bad man came in the night and Daddy is gone. And so what had happened was someone had broke into our home in the middle of the night and walked into my parents' room and stood at the foot of their bed and just opened fire across the headboard. And so my mom was shot in the wrist. Immediately, my dad, you know, heard the shots and jumped up and started screaming, no, no, and told my mom to run out of the room. And so he pushed this man, this intruder, into the bathroom so that my mom could escape with my baby brother who was in the bed. And actually, the bullet was like less than 2 inches from his head. So that in itself is a miracle. He fought for us, and he, you know, my brother and sister were both home, and he saved their lives and my mom's life. I just pretended like I was completely oblivious. I didn't see it on the news, or I didn't see the wanted posters in the CVS, and I didn't hear the rumors. Just, I don't even really know how to describe that feeling, you know, but just, it was everywhere. I just had to give it to the Lord, because the reality is, you know, sometimes there's not a good answer. The only description my mom could give was just that, you know, it was a tall man and he was bald, and he wasn't wearing a mask, but, you know, it was so quick and it was so dark. There's no kind of real identifier. The man who murdered my father has never been caught. They have no idea who it is. I think they only found ever like a fourth of the fingerprint or something like that.
Do those investigators, are they still in contact with you all trying to solve this, or?
Honestly, we don't really keep up with them too much now. I mean, 9 years later, like, the case is still open, but there's just hasn't been progress. Sometimes I'll just, you know, get this freaky feeling. I see someone that looks similar to that wanted poster, you know what I mean? And it's like all these little things that, you know, still affect me in small ways, you know, but it's real.
It's impossible for me to imagine what it would have been like to have someone so close taken in this sudden and horrific way without any explanation. As I spoke with Hannah about her family's experience after her father's murder, I began to understand more and more why they may shy away from speaking to the media.
People were coming to our small school pretending to be my aunt and uncle and try to take me out of school that were news broadcasters, you know what I mean? And
what?
It was like the craziest thing. Yeah, dude, like, it was crazy. And
oh,
like,
my God, I had no idea that happened.
Despite all that happened to her growing up, Hannah remains positive and dead set on making a lasting difference in the world. In fact, last year, at just 19, she launched her own company called Betterment, which partners with local artisans to promote and market locally made goods from around the world in order to give back to communities in need.
There's been so many times I look and I'm like, I would not be here without the Lord. If I was in that house that night, I absolutely would have run into my parents' room. I may not have made it. You know, my siblings may not have made it. They would have followed after me. You know what I mean? Like, every single thing that the Lord has allowed to happen to me, like, I've always believed that it was for a reason.
What interested me the most about Hannah's story was how she said the rest of her family escaped whoever had entered their home on that fateful evening. The bullet that narrowly missed her little brother's head, her mom being able to escape with her brother across the street, and her little sister having been unharmed in the next room. I asked Megan Sprague about her understanding of how these events unfolded.
What do you know about the child that was still inside the home?
I don't know much about that. That really wasn't our focus.
To get a better idea of how all of this happened, I reached out to the neighbors who lived across the street from the Stewarts, the ones who let Angel in to call 911. But after months of reaching out by text, voicemail, and social media, these folks have yet to get back with me, and I'm left with the sense that they'd rather not be a part of this podcast. However, the man in the home who opened the door for Angel, Mike Lawson, has given a handful of interviews over the years. Luckily for us, one of those interviews was with our friend, Jonathan Weaver.
We ran into Mike Lawson. He was out actually walking his dog, and you know, he agreed to talk to us. We went inside the house, and he talked at length from what he could recall about the situation. The things that stick out in my mind now, I remember him talking about the wife coming across the street and knocking on the door. They let her in.
Did he talk about the extent of her wound?
He did. I remember him saying that the wound didn't seem like a gunshot wound. He said, I guess she was just nicked. I mean, the way he described it, it was not a bad wound at all. There was something there, but it wasn't bad, particularly after hearing a story like he had heard.
Okay.
I remember him specifically saying that he doesn't recall hearing her tell anybody about the other child inside the house.
Hello?
Next month, we'll speak with family and friends of Matt, who arrived at the scene early in the morning on June 9th. Unforgotten is a Bold Era production, written and recorded by myself, Freddie Wilson, in the always sunny Daytona Beach, Florida, with audio production and backing tracks by myself and the wonderfully handsome Matt Garrett. Special thanks to Jonathan Weaver, Hannah Stewart, and Megan Sprague for their contributions to this episode. As always, this series is dedicated to the life of Matt Stewart. May his memory remain unforgotten. If you have any suggestions about topics or questions to be included in future special episodes, you can submit them on the forum located at unforgotten.freeforums.net.